there, my name is Jerem Bogwa, and I'm the host of Crime and Consequences Kenya, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Today, our Felistas Mune Mwalia, the victim, Bernard Mwalia Kaliti, the murderer, and Robinson Kaliti, who is the child of Felistas and Bernard, and he was turned into one of the prosecution's key witnesses. So, on February 28th, 2013, Felistas and Bernard were married and living together with their children in Machakos County. The previous night, on February 27, according to their children, Felistas broke into the family store, took some beans, and then she went to spend the night at the neighbor's house. And so when Bernard gets home on February 28th, he's told what happens and he's very, very angry and he immediately goes to find his wife. The very first thing that stood out to me in this story is, why is the wife put in a position where she has to steal beans and then almost go to seek refuge in the neighbor's house? That part for me was very, very weird. It's giving very controlling. It's giving just toxic environment. Let's go on with the story. So Robinson, who's the only child that was named in this story, but they had other children, but Robinson Kaliti, he was 12 years old at this time. He says that later, after they told his father what had happened, he saw his mother and father arrive back at their house. This is now on February 28th, nighttime. His father was armed with a stone and his mother was bleeding from head injuries. Now, they both went into the house and the door was locked. So the children were outside and it was just Bernard and Felistas inside the house. After some time, Robinson says that his father came out and told him that his mother had killed herself by hanging. And I think he wanted the children to go see that, you know, come see your mother has killed herself. So Robinson says that he goes inside the house and he sees his mom hung from a rope. And then he sees his father cut her down, take her body and place it on the bed. This is going to be very, very important, by the way, to remember that part, that he saw his father remove her body and place it on the bed. The next day, on March 1st, 2013, Bernard finally calls the police and reports that his wife took her life by hanging. So Sergeant Isaac is the one that arrives on the scene and he finds Felistas placed on the bed and covered with a blanket. From the house, he recovers a hose stick, a piece of sisal rope, and one blood-stained khaki jacket. He also notices that there are blood-stains on the walls and the floors of the house. Also, he notices that Felistas's legs were broken and there were bones protruding. So this is, to him, this is already a very weird kind of crime scene that's not really being called a crime scene because it's reported to have been a suicide. Was, I think suicide is still illegal in the country. So this was kind of a crime scene. So if she had just hanged herself from, if she had just hanged herself, now this is what I'm assuming he was thinking, why is there blood everywhere? Why does she have broken bones? Why is this jacket bloody? Like, why? It does not make sense to just this being just a suicide by hanging. It did not make sense to him. So Bernard was arrested. Now, in Bernard's testimony, he says that his wife Felistas had slight mental health issues. And because of this, she always was exhibiting strange behaviors, but him, he just gotten used to them and he still loved her despite all her quote unquote mental health issues and strange behaviors. He said that he was with his wife, Felistas, on the 28th and she was alive throughout the whole time that was with him. She was alive and unharmed. And the following day, on March 1st, he left their house at 5 a.m. and returned at 4 p.m. only to find her hanging by a rope. So, according to Bernard's timeline, Felistas didn't die on the 28th. She died on the 1st after he left the house. So he was not there at all when she was dying. So he comes back at 4 p.m., finds his wife hanging by a rope, and he says that he checked for pulse, for any sign of life, for anything. But he saw that she was already dead. And when he tried to cut her loose, she fell. And that's how she sustained all the injuries that she had. He insisted, completely insisted in his statement that he was not at home at the time time of her death. Now, with Bernard in custody, 13 days later, on March 14, 2013, a post-mortem is conducted. The person that conducts the post-mortem is called Dr. Simon Kyoko Muli, and he was the prosecution's fourth witness. So Dr. Muli reveals that Felistas had actually not died by hanging. She had died due to cardiopulmonary arrest caused by intracranial hemorrhage, leading to a severe brain contusion. In very, very simple English, this basically means that she had died because she was hit very, very hard on the head, and this had caused serious bleeding inside her brain. Now, the bleeding inside the brain was so bad that it caused her brain to stop working, and then the minute her brain stopped working, all her major organs, her lungs, her whatever, they started to shut down, and that's how she died. So he completely disputed Bernard's statement that she died by hanging. When it came to the very many injuries that Felistas had when she was found, Dr. Kyoko added that the injuries had been caused by some heavy blunt force trauma, which basically means that she was hit with something very, very hard on the head to cause the bleeding. He added that they could not have come from a fall. So when Bernard says that I was trying to write her down and then she fell, which is how she got all these injuries, he's like, this could definitely not have come from just one fall. He also added that he examined the lungs and he did not establish any signs of asphyxiation. So this basically means that if she had died by hanging, there would be bruising to the neck, there would be damage to her windpipe, or there would be some fluid in her lungs due to suffocation. Her lungs were clear and there was no bruising to her neck or her windpipe. And so he concluded that there were no injuries consistent with hanging, which means that she was hanged after she died. So during the case, the prosecution also calls government chemist Kipngetich Bernard, who said that he recovered, remember when Sergeant Isaac went to the house, he came outside with some pieces of evidence. So he received a piece of wood, a rope, a brown jacket, sand, and a sample of blood from Felistas and Bernard on 18th March 2013. The analysis showed the blood on the item, so the blood on the piece of stick, the blood on the jacket, the blood on the sand in their home. I'm assuming all of this belonged to Felistas. Now, 7 years after this crime has happened, we're now in 2020. The court established that a prima facie case had been made against Bernard, and he recorded a statement via Skype due to COVID-19. So prima facie basically means that the evidence seen by the court was enough for them to finally proceed to trial. During his defense, Bernard argued that he had not been identified as the perpetrator. He said that there was proof that Felistas was dead, yes, but there was no murder weapon that was ever recovered, and that there was nobody who had identified him as the person who did it. But remember, the prosecution had his son Robinson actually point to him and say that, yes, my father is that one. My father and mother came together, they went inside the house, and then he came out alone and he said that she had died by hanging. So Bernard's defense urged the court to acquit Bernard because there was no direct link between him and the crime apart from his son's statement. Now, in response, the prosecution states that Bernard's son, Robinson, placed him at the scene of the crime, and that was basically enough. That was all the evidence that they needed, because if a child who is 12 years old says that he saw you go inside with his mom and then later you're the only one who came, we're going to believe that. So the prosecution brings their witnesses and they state their case. Then the defense did not bring any witnesses, but they just had Bernard's testimony, and that is what they went with. Now let's go to the judgment of this case. The prosecution had to prove two things. One, that Bernard actually committed the crime, and two, that there was malice afterthought. Malice afterthought basically means that the actions that you are doing at any particular moment, you know that they're likely to cause somebody death or very serious harm, but you're still doing them, even if they're not premeditated, which means that they're not pre-planned. You know that what I am doing right now is actively causing this person a lot of harm, but then you're still doing it. So every time there's a murder case, the prosecution is always burdened to not only prove that you committed the murder, but you committed the murder with malice afterthought. So this case was before Judge D.K. Kemei, and he delivered his final judgment on 25th November of 2020. This is 7 years after the crime had happened. So as I say, the prosecution had the burden to prove the offense of murder in order to sustain a conviction. So under section 203, as read with 204 of the Penal Code, the prosecution must prove beyond any reasonable doubt that there was a death of a human being and it was unlawfully caused with malice afterthought, either directly or indirectly. directly by the accused person. The judge made some very interesting points, according to me, when he was delivering his judgment. And he asked this one question. He said that, why did Bernard interfere with the body by removing it instead of leaving it as is and waiting for the police to arrive and do it themselves? He said, the only irresistible conclusion that can be made is that the accused had killed the deceased and wanted to make it appear like she had committed suicide so as to escape from any kind of blame. The evidences of the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth witnesses from the prosecution side clearly established that something took place inside the house where the body of the deceased was found, and that the same must be attributed to the accused. In his ruling, he states that there was no evidence that Felistas had provoked Bernard in any way or attacked him so as to justify his retaliation. He added that Bernard's alibi was not at all convincing and that it did not in any way disprove what the prosecution was trying to say, that he was the murderer. And so he said that the evidence against Bernard was actually overwhelming. So Bernard was found guilty of murder contrary to section 203 as read section 204 of the Penal Code, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And that is the story of Felistas Mune Mwalia, who was, I think that when I was reading this story, this is one of those deaths that's just very unnecessary. And you can tell that Felistas is dead just because the husband had some type of ego. And him, the fact that he said that she had some mental, she had some mental health issues and he had to get used to them, blah, blah, blah. It's also giving a bit of narcissism. Like, you know me, I was very perfect. You know, I took her as she was, but her, you know, she was this, she was that. And even the cover up to this murder was so sloppy, and I'm thinking it's because he thought that he was so much smarter, that if he said that she had killed himself and he said that it's because she had all these mental health issues, everybody would be like, oh, you know what, you're right. So this was a very unnecessary death. This was a very ego-driven crime, I feel. And I feel that him just getting 20 years is actually not justice for the amount of pain that he not only caused his wife, but also his children. Because remember that his 12-year-old child, 12 years old, he had to be part of the prosecution's witnesses against his father. So he's not only lost his mother, but he's actively contributing in something that means that he could lose his father as well. So this was very selfish of Bernard. And I'm not sure, because sometimes in court, this took 7 years to prosecute. So from 2013 to 2020. And so sometimes when they give you 20 years, they're going to say it's 20 years plus time served. So that means that if you've been, he was arrested in 2013. So if you've been in jail since 2013, those 7 years that you've been in jail, going to trial and everything, they count towards that part of your 20 years. And so that only means that he has another 13 years to go. He could be out by 2033, and if that's the case, it's very sad. I don't feel that this is justice. I feel like he should have gotten life in prison, because Kenya doesn't have the death sentence anymore. And I really hope that wherever Felistas' children are, I hope that they found peace. I hope to God that they found some kind of therapy, and I hope that they're doing well. But I don't wish anything good happens to Bernard. You know, this was very, it's just one of those things that you read and you're just like, some emotional intelligence could go a very, very long way. Because already, if you look at this relationship, like, why does your wife have to break into a store? Like, why are you hiding food from your family? Why are you so controlling that your wife has to wait for you to not be home to take some beans, because maybe she was very hungry, and then she has to go seek refuge in a neighbor's house, you know? And then when you're coming back, you've already beat her from wherever it is that you guys were. You've already beat her because she's coming back bleeding, and you have a stone that you carry, and you take her inside the house and you lock the door. You know, you kill her, and then you're like, you know what, she's dead, I have to drag my 12-year-old children into this also. Come and see that your mother killed herself. So it's just very sad. And I hope that Felistas is resting in peace. I hope that her children found some type of peace. I hope that this cycle of abuse, because unfortunately what happens in cases like these, when children are involved with intense abuse like this, they sometimes also become abusers in their life, you know, because this destroys them from the inside, you know. And so I really, really hope that they had some very helpful resources. I hope that they're thriving and they're happy. And I hope that they remember their mom softly and they remember her gently. And I hope that they have not forgiven their father. This is one of those things where forgiveness just won't cut it. I don't think so. And so if you've listened to this part, thank you so much for listening to me. If you want to support the show, you can do that by following me on Spotify. Just click that plus thing and follow. You can give me 5 stars if you think that I did a good job. That goes a long way in helping Spotify push my content further. You can also follow me on Instagram and TikTok from KonsKE. I try and do small snippets of videos of the cases that I've covered in length here on Spotify. So if you go to KonsKE on TikTok and Instagram, you're going to find me there. I hope you have a very good Wednesday and I will see you next time. Bye.